land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other God before me. You shall not make for yourselves an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on earth, the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of parents to the third and fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien residents in your town. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in it, but rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Honour your father and your mother, so that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbour. You shall not covet your neighbour's house. You shall not covet your neighbour's wife, or male or female slave, or ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbour. Then we read in the first book of Corinthians, and we're reading from verse 18. For the message about the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, God decided through the foolishness of our proclamation to save those who believe. The Jews demand signs, and the Greeks desire wisdom. But we proclaim Christ crucified, a stumbling block to the Jews and the foolishness to Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Gentiles, Christ the power and the wisdom of God. For God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom, and God's weakness is stronger than human strength.
Thank you, Christine. I think you're very game, though, to leave it all to me. In the last couple of weeks, we've heard the story of covenant being told as a steadfast and sure invitation. Be present with the God who will and does welcome all creation. As creator and covenant maker, the God of Noah, of Abraham and of Moses, creates a way of living that is holy and sacred, and filled with a promise of being part of something that is wonderfully transformative. The readings take on a slightly different track today. We are face to face with the same God, but there is an all-consuming energy present which will not be easily turned away. And so I'm going to offer two messages today. There'll be part A and there'll be part B. And within either one of those, you may get something that is worthwhile. If you don't, I apologise. And go home and read them again for yourself. The first part will be speaking about the covenantal relationship and the framework in which this covenant relationship exists with God. And we're going to do broad brush strokes, really broad. I mean, I could spend an entire year on the what we call the Ten Commandments and get nowhere close to really speaking to what they are about. When I was a child, my parents said to me, "Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that." You knew where you were with mum and dad. Don't run in the house. Don't speak that way. Don't bash other kids up. Although it was more me that was getting bashed, but that's another story. Oh, thanks for the laughter. Wow. No, it's too late now. It's too late. No, I'm crushed. I'm mortally wounded and I'll never recover. Nowadays, though, and certainly in recent years, and maybe when I was growing up as much too, I don't want to be too unfair on mum and dad, but rather than saying don't do this and don't do that, we now have to, or are encouraged to say, please do this. Try this way. So don't run with scissors in your hand. Duh. Would become, please walk when you're holding scissors, and would you, if you wouldn't mind, would you please hold them carefully? Of course, that trying to get that through to a five-year-old who's already running full pelt with scissors in their hand, trying to get them slow down enough for you to communicate positively to them is a miracle in itself. Stop hitting your sister becomes, please find a game you can both play together without killing each other or leaving a mess or destroying the game. We've been taught to replace the negative with the positive, which is okay, I suppose, if you like that sort of thing. For all those of you who do and think we should be doing that, I do apologise. It's all good work and well done to you. And it's appropriate perhaps for 21st century Australia, by the way. But applying that kind of mindset and looking back at what we now call the Ten Commandments and saying, well, there's a lot of negative in there. Maybe if God reworded it a bit more kindly, he might have had a bit more success with people. Maybe if God was a bit more positive and encouraging of his children. Maybe then they might have done as they were told and encouraged. It doesn't work that way, though. So I just want to dwell momentarily on a few things. Firstly, we call these the Ten Commandments. It's what's been handed on. Thank you, Charlton Heston, for that wonderful view of wind-blown hair and dark and two stone tablets in his hand, which actually weren't the Ten Commandments. If you actually read what happens in Exodus, that's not only them anyway. But if we call them Ten Commandments, we're actually dumbing down what we hear and we make it something it is not. Specifically, we make it a list of do's and don'ts. We're commanded to do this and we're commanded to do that. But the reading actually says and begins with, these are the words of God. These are words. These are not Ten Commandments. Rather, they are 10 words in the largest sense of what is being offered. See, when you hear these are 10 words, 10 words become part of a much larger and richer conversation because it's 10 words among many rather than 10 commandments which must be followed and everything else needs to sort of come after that. 10 words, it's part of a conversation between a God who has deliberately and intentionally chosen to be in a faithful relationship with his people and with all creation, which is what we get from the Noah and the Abraham stories. God's going to be in relationship with the descendants who are now the recipients of these words, what we would best call the nomadic community of Israel. This community of Israel, not yet fully formed as the powerful nation that it will become, they're moving around in the wilderness. They're trying to work things out. They're not good at this stuff of their identity and knowing who they are. They've been in slavery for 400 years. They've just sort of waltzed across the Red Sea. They don't know who they are. And so they start having this conversation with words with God. And by the way, if we want to think about Ten Commandments, if you link that to the idea of being slaves, moving from one idea of slavery to another idea of slavery, which is in the sense the word commandments carries that connotation, perhaps is not the best way to go, and we continue to be unhealthily tethered to these 10 words. So 10 words, part of a much larger conversation, which we could all learn a good lesson about. You know, this person said this, but yes, what happened before and what happened after and how did they get there and why do they think that? Well, I don't know. Good place to start. But 10 words are part of a much larger conversation between the God of all peoples and all creation and this particular people and this particular time and place. God is expressing faithfulness in relationship. And the people are learning what this faithfulness looks like and feels like. They don't know. They think they kind of know what they're supposed to do. They think they kind of know this God, but it hasn't really been established. And so they need some parameters in which they can operate. And so these 10 words become something more than what we need to follow in order to be in good relationship with God. I mean, that's the kind of, what do you think you should do in order to follow God? Well, I should at least obey the Ten Commandments. It's about relationship. It's about relationship. And they are the essence of practiced and learned faithfulness through the people of Israel. So we have these. This is one way of seeing these 10 words. We might want to look at what the borders are. Now, this is a group of people who are wandering around in the wilderness. They really do not know what to do next. Have you ever felt like that? Wandering around in a wilderness, not knowing what to do next. So you need some parameters with which it gives you a sense of comfort and confidence. Okay, at least I know where my parameters are. At least I know where I am. And so we have these 10 words. You shall have no other gods. You shall not make idols. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God. You shall not kill rather than you shall not murder. By the way, you shall not kill. If you have you shall not murder, it kind of gives you an out if you kill people. But that's not the way it's supposed to be. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. And you shall not covet. 8 very clear parameters. These are your boundaries in which you need to operate. Yep. We're okay with that? Feeling enlivened and encouraged in your relationship with God so far? Oh, good. That's great. It's fantastic. Job's done. See, Christine, it's not that hard after all. But what do we do within those borders? If we all know where we can go, we know how far we can push. We know how far we can be stretched. We know how far we can wander. But what do we do then? I need to know what my next step is. And the next step is, well, what do we create internally? So we have these two. Remember the Sabbath day. One of only 2 commandments that's given in a positive. Remember the Sabbath day, a day of rest. Not because it's a good idea, but because everything else rests. Everything needs rest. We need rest because this day has been made holy by God. And so we need the rest to be sustained. We need rest for our hearts and our minds, not so that we can be good and we can go to dress up in our good clothes and go to church, by the way. Because I know a lot of people who do that sort of thing and actually don't rest very much on the Sabbath. And anyway, it was a Saturday for the Jews. So, you know, Christians have got it wrong for 2,000 years. We've been having the Sabbath on the Sunday, which perhaps explains some of our confusion. Stay with me. and honour your father and mother. You're all waiting. What do we do with this? Well, you know what? It's a good commandment to have. And the reason is that in Israel in those days, the older your parents got, the less capacity they had to look after themselves. And therefore, your responsibility, it's not about thy young kids, you should do as your children, you should do as your parents tell you, which is how we're sort of taught this. You need to honour your father and mother, so do what they tell you to do. No, well, not only, but it's the richer. It's okay, Mark, I'm not going to take that. Daniel, Ayla, Amber, do as your parents tell you. It's just a clear... That's what that says for you right now. Angus, Liam, I'm just making sure. Kate, if it's okay, you're an adult now. You're an adult. So now, the good news is, Bron, he has to look after us. But it's about this holistic approach to the family network, because that's all you've got. And so children are to honour their father and mother. Don't let them die in the dust because they've got no support. Don't forget about them because they can no longer work. When your parents are old and infirm and aged, don't neglect them. So it's actually not framed as a honour your father and mother by doing as you're told, but honour your father and mother because they have got you to the point where you can, and you have learned what that means. You make all sense? You're happy? We're okay with that so far? I'm not quite sure what I'd do if you said no. Now, these are good commandments, but what do they mean practically for us today? And there is actually a lot of good practicality we can take out of this. And it occurred to me this morning, it took that long for God to get it through to me, that we have a very similar kind of rule base. And I'm not talking about the Australian law. By the way, most of Western society takes a lot of their emphasis in laws from the Ten Commandments or words to that effect. I'm actually talking about how we live here as a church. So, you know, it's good. You shall not kill. Fantastic. We're all fairly safe with that. You shall not bear false witness. You shall not covet. No committing adultery. No stealing. You shall not have no other gods. These are all good for us. However, we've also got a constitution. We have our own set of rules that we have to follow. And so as part of our constitution, we have, at the outset, we have two things that are our objects. The purpose of why we exist, stated in black and white, is the objects of the church are to glorify God in worship, in fellowship. It means in how we relate with one another and with others, in our witness, how we speak about others and how we engage with others beyond our own community. And in service, in accordance with the faith and the story expressed in the biblical texts, not just the ones we like, not just the ones we agree with, but the entirety, and practiced by churches of Christ, which links us in with that wider body, that wider movement of churches that says, we're not out here on our own. We are in the midst of a great community of witnesses who are dedicated to practicing this. We also say in our constitution, the church will live in a way that promotes and expresses the Christian faith, including charitable and educational strategies, and to bring people into a life-changing journey with Jesus Christ. Now, that's some really good, robust way of what it means for us to be a people of God here together. That's a legal document, by the way. That's what guides us. Since then, we've come up, there's all these other wonderful things called policies. I love policies. The management team will communicate my great love of policies. We've got many policies. Haven't we, Trevor Ellis? Where are you, Trev? There you are. Trev and John and others have been faithfully attending to policies. And you know what? There's a lot of do-nots in there, isn't there? Yeah. A lot of these policies, and I'm just going to quickly read out some of what our policies are. Policies and procedures. We have banking policy, budget process, building maintenance, child safety code of conduct, child safety leader to participant ratios, child safety policy, and so on for a lot more child safety. church governance, claims for reimbursement, code of conduct, confidentiality, delegation and charter. You can read all these policies, by the way. We have, Trevor would love to sit down with you. He's got some. So now we're just going to turn our attention to Trev. And one by one, he's going to read our policies, which include information technology, which is a new one that we've just, the management team has just signed off on, insurance, personnel records, petty cash, remuneration and benefits. I mean, that shouldn't be a policy. I can't say the first one. Retention and disposal of records, staff leave, risk management, staff training, termination of employment, terms and conditions of employment, volunteers. We need a policy for our volunteers, grievance policies, workers' compensation, workplace inspections, workplace health and safety, and so on. It's a lot of policies, and I've read them, and there's a lot of do nots, isn't there? Am I wrong? Can the management? No, I'm not wrong. No, our chair's given me the official word. I'm not wrong. There's a lot of do not in there. And we can read that, and we say, well, that's just, you know, it does our head in. And the management team have been very faithful in working their way through and saying, what does it mean to have these policies and live them well? The policies, at the end, their purpose is not to make sure all the boxes are ticked and everyone is behaving. As good as that might be, but it's a lot of exhausting work, isn't it? I mean, you have been parents, school teachers, just the school teachers among us, if you could just raise your hands. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, it's exhausting trying to have kids behave, isn't it? Continuously saying, do not, do not, do not. It's a lot of work. So what do you do? We look at it from this perspective about glorifying God. And there's another phrase that's part of our child safe policy that was initiated from the conference centre, state office. We're about fostering churches where all people can flourish. Now, the downside is if we just said we want to be a church where people can flourish, it's kind of a bit open slather, isn't it? But we now have our borders, our policies and our procedures, our Ten Commandments, the biblical text. But in the middle of it, in the middle, we want to be a vibrant, faithful community in relationship with God, serving the community well, so that we are a church where people can flourish. Our borders exist to let us know, hey, this is where we're going off the rails then. And as we heard on Friday night when Peanut Barney spoke, there's been too many, and certainly in recent years, but there's a long catalogue of the times that Christian leaders and Christians have gone off because they've decided that that border no longer applies to them. And the great damage that has been incurred because they've decided the border, the policy, the commandment doesn't apply. And they've just ignored it. But the real work, the real joy is the creative energy that happens in the middle. That's where our focus should be, where people can flourish. Does that make sense? Are we okay with that? Do we want to ask anything? Check. Sorry, Trevor, I know you're eager for the microphone. If you really want to, please go and see Trevor Ellis later. He'd love to show you the policies. And by the way, I don't want to be dismissive, the work on the policies has been a tremendous amount of work over, 4, 5, 6 years. It's a phenomenal effort, and we are deeply grateful for the work that has been done by those people who have done them, because they have given us a great framework of what it means to be part of this community. So thank you, certainly to those key people who have been working on them. But part of the conversation I had with Trevor Ellis was this sense of, if we looked at policies and just say, oh, this is a lot of hard work, we wouldn't do it. But instead what we get a policy and then we learn how to put it in action. And then we get a policy and work out how to put it in action. Then we get a policy. And it's just this constant, okay, now how does this apply? How does this work out? And it's the same for the Israelite community. They get the law. If you read through Exodus, they get the law, some of it, then they work it out. Then they get some more, then they work it out. There's constant flow. If you started You know, just a complete dump of, look, here are the commandments, go home and learn them. Here are our policies, go home and then we'll work out what we do. You'd never start. So we learn a little, we play a little, we discover a little, then we apply. And then we refit. And so that's the same with the story of Exodus. We do the same. Part of our intent is to be shaped by the law or the words we receive. And then we spend time figuring out how to actually shape our daily lives. So we don't stop doing policies and procedures and no, don't. We keep doing that, but in the context of a much larger playing area. Because it is about living in a way that's healthy. And our task is, if we flourish when we're healthy. And when we know how to be healthy, then we keep opting for that way. When we're not healthy, it's really hard to be a good relationship. And we know that for ourselves. Here's a second message for you. Absolutely, probably, you might say, what's it got to do with the first? I don't know. But they are connected. What we didn't get in the Exodus reading were these words that are immediately afterwards. When all the people witnessed, so the people are there, Moses is not off there by himself, by the way. We have this image that the people are away. The people are right there in the thick of it with Moses. When all the people witnessed the thunder and lightning, the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, they were afraid and trembled and stood at a distance and said to Moses, "You speak to us and we will listen, but don't let God speak to us or we will die." Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid." Do not be afraid, one of the many times in Scripture those words are said. "For God has come only to test you and to put the fear of him upon you so that you do not sin." And the people stood at a distance while Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. The thick darkness. Covenant living takes shape in the places of darkness, where we may fear to be present. When we would rather send somebody else in our stead. "No, you go and when it's too much for us, you go and do it. Not us. Somebody else can go." Entering the places where God speaks with us is a terrifying and overwhelming experience. In the thick darkness where God communes with Moses, this is a place of sacred vulnerability and trust. It is a place where relationship flourishes. Even if those who are looking on are terrified of what may be transpiring in the thick darkness. The thick darkness, then, is the place where God is present. The dark places are not necessarily the places that are full of monsters and goblins and ghouls and fears threatening to destroy us. The dark places may be the very places we need to enter, where the fullness of God is most present, or if not most, perhaps most passionately experienced. And this is hard because, well, we've been taught to stay away from the dark places. I know at home, we have a nightlight that exists at one end of the house that does enough to light the corridor. Without it, the corridor is pitch black. And you won't find your way from one end of the house to the other. So we put a light there because we don't want the dark. We've been taught to stay away from the dark places. Secondly, we've been taught to go towards the light. Come out into the light. Jesus is the light of the world, we are told. Jesus tells the disciples, "You are to be the light of the world. Why would you want to go into the darkness?" And therefore, we have seen darkness as the do not enter place. But what if the thick darkness is the place we are all welcomed to enter? And truth be told, I think most of us, if not all of us, have gone through a thick darkness at some stage in our life. I wonder what it would be like if we were given permission to be there and to linger there until we had been touched by the invisible hand of God. What would it be like if, like Moses and like Jesus, who entered his own thick darkness, we entered the thick darkness and found not only that we carried our light with us, but that we were also communing with the Most High and Holy God, whose sheer presence both stuns us into silence and weaves a new pattern of speech in us, as well as gives us life beyond that which we now experience. What would it be like if we entered the thick darkness and discovered there is life there too? Not the, I've got to get through this so that I can get out of it, which is sometimes how we speak about thick darkness, but the thick darkness where we experience something of the newness and the beauty and the creativity of God. The thick darkness, which for Jesus was entering the veil of death and lying in the ground for 3 days, we proclaim Christ crucified, Christ who entered the thick darkness, who instructed his disciples to do the same. The thick darkness was not something of which we need to be avoiding, but we receive the thick darkness as a place of invitation and of renewal. And what if, instead of either avoiding the thick darkness, especially as we journey through this Lenten season, which may be for you happening now or at another time of your life, but what if instead of sending someone to go in our place because we are terrified and we don't want to die, because every time you enter the thick darkness, there is a death. But what if we found within ourselves the capacity to receive this as a gift? Maybe this Lenten season, maybe God's invitation with you to explore the reality of being in faithful relationship with God, even in the thick darkness where others dare not go.